Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I am playing an interview with truly a one-of-a-kind human being, Steve DePass, born with words in his mouth, speaking, rhyming, performing virtually before he could stand. Steve has made a long life of performing, of entertaining, of making other people's lives better. Born sickly, held on to life with the help of a completely dedicated and loving family who nurtured and stimulated and loved him into life, Steve has spent his life sharing that love with the rest of us. Labeled America's Singing Poet by Nelson Rockefeller, who was then governor, soon to be vice president of the United States. This is a remarkable story, and also I am playing three songs of Steve's, and he speaks many lyrics during the show. It's a remarkable interview. It's a remarkable story. He's a remarkable man. Hang on. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down
is all about understanding that even though we think we are who we are, the chances are good that there are some aspects of yourself for which you are in denial. Which is to say, there are things about yourself which you may not realize. Things which, when you demonstrated them as a child, somehow didn't go over well enough for you to feel comfortable embracing them, recognizing them, allowing them to be. And so, as I have said over and over in these shows, we're so flexible, we're so clever, we're so, I don't actually know what the word is, maybe it's self-defensive. We figure out, our unconscious finds a way to hide those aspects of ourselves which are not working in the circumstance of our childhood. And so we grow up in ignorance, quite often, of some really profoundly important parts of ourselves. And not only, as I have said over and over, are these parts of ourselves which we could use, they are parts of ourselves which are quite often taking control of us. and forcing behaviors which we would like to change and don't understand why we can't. And the answer to why we can't is quite often that there is a part of ourselves that is lobbying through us without our conscious awareness or our conscious acquiescence. And so it is only discovering those parts of ourselves, bringing them out into the light, that makes it possible for us to deal with them and in many ways then do some of the things we want to do and have not been able to do. So that's what this show is about, and I talk about that. And this conversation about why this happens, how we do it, how you can discover those parts, what you do when you've discovered them, that shows up in a lot of my shows. Not all, but a lot of my shows. And if you're interested in that, because I'm not going to talk any more about that today, you can go to my website, thelynnshow.com, T-H-E-L-Y-N-N-E, don't leave the E out, S-H-O-W, thelynnshow.com, and click on the concepts that look of interest to you, and the shows will come up and you can listen to them. The other thing I do is I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. And again, as I've said over and over and over and over, I do it because those people demonstrate what it means when you are really who you are. Because people who make their living or their life with an art, at least in that area of their life, are just who they are, not dissembling in any way. And I am giving over this entire show to not only the interview, but the music of Steve DePass, America's singing poet. And you will hear him tell how he got that title from Nelson Rockefeller, who was, when he gave him the title, governor of New York and then finally vice president of the United States. You will hear in Steve a person who is just who he is and who apparently has been this remarkable thing virtually since the day he was born. And was lucky enough to have a family that not only nurtured him, but encouraged him, supported him in his being who he is. So I'm going to stop talking now because I want to play the whole interview and I want to play several songs of Steve's. I'm going to start out playing a song called The Individual Song. He will actually quote a little bit from this in the interview. It's so amazing, but it makes the point. It makes my very point that we are all individuals, although many of us are desperately trying to look like someone else, everybody else, anybody else. It is finding the individual that you are that makes life easier, makes you have the life that most fits you. How can you have the life that most fits you if you're not yourself, your individual? So here, Steve captures this so amazingly and demonstrates how he is an individual, the one and only Steve DePass. And right on the heels of the individual song, I'm going to play the interview. And so here now, Steve DePass and the individual song.
I'm very proud to be an individual, even in a crowd. I'm still an individual, separate, sovereign, special, individual, and hot damn, that's what I am. Groups we belong to bear a lot of influence. Ethnic or national, it colors your experience. But even in a group, there's an awful lot of variance, and I'm an individual man.
Hot damn, that's what I am.
Our country was founded, grounded in the principle, filling my mind with ideas that are invincible, and none can invade where my thoughts unwind the privacy of my mind. That's me thinking, free thinking, son of Uncle Sam and Buddy.
Hot damn, that's what I am.
I'm very proud just to be an American. If my country does wrong, I'll help her not to err again. I'm proud of my
country from sea to shining sea, but I'm most proud just to be me. And as an individual, I care about morality, which has no exclusivity in race or nationality. And I refuse to compromise my own personality. And I'm an individual man. Hot damn, that's what I am. Our country was founded, grounded in the principle, filling my mind with ideas that are invincible, and none can invade where my thoughts unwind, the sanctuary of my mind. My country is a big national variety, advanced in the legacy we pass on to posterity. Men like me, proud and free, make a free society, and I'm an individual, separate, sovereign, special individual, and hot damn, that's what I am. United we stand, and divided we fall away. Let the truth unite us, and the garbage hope can fall away. Sorting out the true and false in every big and smaller way is me, the individual. No one can conquer the strength I find in the citadel of my mind. And I'm very proud to be an individual here, where I'm allowed to be an individual. Separate, sovereign, special individual, and hot damn, that's what I am.
I am sitting here in the Lambs Club with the remarkable, unique, one-of-a-kind Steve DePass.
Thank you so much, Lynn. It's nice of you to describe me that way. I might tell you a quick story about my title, America's Singing Poet. That title was given to me by then Vice President Rockefeller.
Oh, why?
Because I used to work a lot for Rocky when he was the governor of New York State. And I performed before the joint sessions of the legislature many times. And during the civil rights era, he was my sponsor. And I hopped all over the country in his private jet, doing troubleshooting, speaking, and performing at different rallies and things. But he was the sponsor, big civil rights guy.
Yeah.
Rocky was a nice guy. So when he left the governorship and took up the vice presidency for Gerald Ford, he brought me in to perform for Gerald Ford. And on that occasion, he introduced me as the Carl Sandburg of our time, America's singing poet, Steve DePass. And so afterwards I said to him, oh, what a wonderful phrase, America's singing poet. It's so flattering. He said, well, why don't you get it trademarked? And I said, that's what I did. So hence I've been America's singing poet.
Now, in a little while, I want to ask you to talk specifically about what that means. I was lucky enough to hear it, and I know what it means. But before we go there, I only interview people who make their living or their life within art, which is so clearly what you've done.
Mm-hmm.
And I always ask the same question, and it is, how did it happen? How did you start? How did it find you? How did this thing begin?
I think it is who I am, who I have always been. I have ever been thus. And it was manifest when I was very, very young.
Tell me, how young?
I would say, when I began to speak, I never went through the mama, dada stage. At 18 months of age, I suddenly began engaging in conversation. and I spoke in sentences, and I was coherent, and I had a vocabulary, and I spoke.
At 18 months old?
At 18 months of age, yes. And so I was always, but my mother had nurtured me by whispering in my ear and singing in my, because I was a preemie, I was only 26 ounces at birth.
Oh my.
I was only a 6 months, nobody even knew my mother was pregnant, and so there was much concern as to whether I would survive. And the stimulation was coffee and verbal stimulation and singing to me and talking to me all the time. So I never ceased to be stimulated verbally.
Yes.
So hence the word, and I believe in the word, as it says in any version of the Bible that you read, Old Testament, New Testament, in the beginning there was
the word.
That's it. And I believe that. The word is the power is in the word.
Okay, so you're 18 months old and you're this miraculous speaking person. And so how did you get from there?
They didn't think I would survive that winter. So they took me back to my parents' home in the West Indies, where I stayed until I was school age. And when I was 5 years of age, I performed at the Palace Theater with Clayton Jackson and Durante, the Jimmy Durante and
the
Vaudeville Revival. And
what were you doing at 5 years old?
Improvising songs and singing, mostly calypso songs. And right.
Oh, from the beginning,
yes.
You were finding the lyrics that rhymed and made sense in your head that were not written down anywhere.
Right. I could extemporize to any established rhythm or melody.
Wow.
And sometimes I would just wing both. You see, but I sang straight songs and you know, did the buck dancing and tap dancing and that kind of
thing. Did you have any training, or this is just all?
Later on, with Star Allen Studios here in New York, which was a big deal then for what was supposed to be gifted children, I toured with them and I learned all my fundamentals. When I was 10, I went into the original Carmen Jones on Broadway, and I stayed with them until for about 13 months. And I did little things. But then when I started to be pubescent, because I was so tiny for having been born preemie, then I started to...
So you must have looked even younger than you were.
Yes.
You must have been something.
Yeah. So when I started to hit my pubescence and started to begin to mature physically and started to grow into my own body, then I discovered that I wanted to be a jock. And so I got involved more in sports and things. I have a reticence about talking about my boxing career because I have evolved psychologically and philosophically and spiritually to the point where I don't really identify with that guy, even though it was combat. But it was having grown up with it. And then when I was going through college too, I was coming out of the Department of Parks and I became a boxing trainer. And so I have a connection that starts in your formative years and you never quite lose that itch. And so I'm very involved in historically in boxing and in the contemporary boxers and things. And so that is just a part of it. I had a high school teacher who used to speak to me so earnestly about my inner self and my spiritual side and my intellectual gifts and my gifts for language and so on. Oh, you think you're a fighter, you're not a fighter, you're a poet, you're a philosopher, you're a thinker. This guy had a big influence on me to make me identify,
yes,
this is really who you are.
But, so I have a lot of questions about that. I mean, it's kind of an interesting dichotomy mm-hmm. for you to have been both of those things, right? And it's potentially a conflict for a person to have those two parts of themselves, right?
Well, yeah, I always knew this was who I was. I suppose that... I was an athlete.
Well, you were also a boy.
Yes, and
it's more.
And I played football.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I'm not sure exactly when in the world you were growing up, but I imagine the pressure was on boys to be more physical.
Macho.
Yeah, more macho, exactly.
I suppose.
And you had the talent.
There was a lot of that, I suppose. I was fortunate to grow up in Corona, Queens, at a time when Corona was a beautiful cosmopolitan community with all kinds of people. And the strongest influence in my life, besides my own loving family, and I come from very loving people, very gifted people, were this Irish family that I grew up with, and the Quinns. And I'm still very, very close to the Quinns. And my dearest friend is Duke Quinn, who befriended me in first grade, and we remained best friends to this day.
Wow.
And as a matter of fact, in concert, I talk about the Quinns and I sing about the Quinns. And having grown up in their household, I sing a song, which I sang at the United Nations, called I'm a Quinn, describing my life growing up with the Quinns. I'm a Quinn, but Jesus, I'm a Quinn. You can't tell it by the color of me skin, but in case there's any doubt, you can turn me inside out and turn me skin side in, and I'm a Quinn.
Oh, I love it. I love it. So so I'm interested because you started so young and you had success so young in so many different areas. One of the things it's really clear to me about you is how well educated you are, how much you know. NYU?
Yeah.
So you went to college, yeah, even though you had all of these things. You could have leapt off into a boxing career, you could have leapt off into a performing career, but you went to college, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, what did you major in?
Physical education.
Amazing.
Yeah. I started in journalism, and I switched to physical education because I had an accident in boxing and I wanted to rebuild my body, and a myocarditis thing with the heart. So I went into phys ed.
Very smart, and also, as my mother always said, something to fall back on. Not that you clearly ever needed it, but...
There's a lot of falling back, particularly when you've chosen a career in the performing arts with no guarantees, and, you know, sometimes it's feast and famine, and then there's always the search for the next job, and you never know.
Yeah, I want to talk about that a little later, too. So we have you in college, and you're a phys ed teacher, and so how did you wind up... I'm so interested in the thing that seemed to come in with you, this love of the word and this gift that you had.
In addition to being an improvisational artist, I'm a very serious and disciplined poet.
God, I am so fascinated because it's my belief that someone who could do what you could do spontaneously would take the time to create the discipline to do the other thing. And the other thing, I think, is that when you can do as many things well as you can do, it's difficult.
I don't know if I do everything so well. I mean, I have certain gifts, and I love people, and I love, like, for example, I love the Scots. Mm-hmm. And
I should just say, I saw Steve perform at a wedding of a friend of mine at the Scots Resort.
Yes.
And it is owned by the Scots, and Steve has performed there for how long?
Oh, I'd say about 20 years.
20 years. So it is the Scots, the people who own this
I struck up a friendship with them some 20 years ago, and I eventually got up there, and I was to write the anthem for the Scots according to the moniker they have over the main entrance to the door, which reads, Love is Spoken Here. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen that?
Yes, song? I have.
Mm-hmm. Right, so I wrote that anthem, which says, lay down your burden, lay down your burden, open your mind, here we are caring, here we are kind, here you are welcome, have no fear, here we understand each other, love is spoken here.
Awesome.
Smiley while at our house, rest, refresh, renew. You need to find peace of mind. We need you. Feast at our table in good cheer. It's fun to be one of us. Love is spoken here. See the lake, caress the shore where the rainbow ends. We'll be strangers nevermore. Just forever friends, our love stays with you after you roam. When you return, we will say, welcome home. Till then, remember, year after year, May through September, neighbor, love is spoken, love is spoken, love is spoken here. That's the anthem.
It's perfect.
And those who come there, they all get a little parchment with it.
I didn't. They should have done it.
They didn't.
Why didn't
for the
you
wedding,
do it? No.
For the, you know, so.
Well, my God,
but,
it's probably that they
say
must
that,
adore it.
I say that because I identify with this Scotty and Dara's spirit of joy and music and fun. I identify with all that, and it's genuine with them, mm-hmm. and they've made a living with it. That,
yes.
As have I.
Yes. Okay, so just a little of what is, how long a career are we talking about here?
70 years.
7-0?
Yes.
Okay, so why don't you give me some highlights? You know, you got out of school as a phys ed, I can't get over it, teacher. But clearly, that's not
I
the
was,
only
well,
thing.
I was performing all the while I was in college, even though I was doing other things, and I worked training fighters, but I performed gigs, did a lot of gigs. I sometimes lecture, and I'll occasionally do programs which have a theme, like I did the concert at the United Nations, which was for acceptance. Mm-hmm. You know, acceptance is the word that transcends love. Love has limitations and sometimes imposes conditions under the threat of withdrawal if you don't accommodate my expectations of who you are and how you should be. But acceptance takes up the slack where love gives up. And if I accept you, you're all right with me no matter what. And this is the greater thing. Hence my time with the Quins and growing up with the Quins from disparate cultures. And yet we found each other and we simply fell in line with each other in terms of acceptance. And,
yes.
And this is, it's more than love.
I know, I hear you. And it seems to me that all of the experiences of your life, your family's insistence that you survive,
right.
You know, the care.
And I come from, you know, great loving people. My mother and father suffered extreme privations due to discrimination. My father, Oxford educated, and with all of his gifts and so on, he had a terrible time in America because of discrimination. And he could never measure up commensurate with his education and things were very, very difficult. But the most important thing is there was never from my mother nor my father any kind of bitterness pertaining to other people or the kind of scapegoating blame of the general they, and they're doing this to me. And our doors were always open to anyone and everyone from whatever walk of life, whatever ethnicity that you see. And my father was a Hebrew scholar, and he had two tutors most of his life. They both died young, but was one rabbi used to tutor him for years and years till he said he couldn't learn anymore from him. And on Sundays, my father used to go up all the way to Westchester for tutorial lessons and with the Torah and with a different thing. But he was a scholar in languages, all kinds of languages, and he could read Sanskrit and hieroglyphics and all that
goodness.
Kind of stuff.
So clearly, the word runs in your family.
Yeah. When I was a senior in college, I wrote a few things that I sold. One was a Calypso show for an agent named Milton Morrison. Later on, when I was I dropped out of grad school, which I did, and I went on the road singing the production numbers with that. I did this and that. Then later on, I won the Godfrey Talent Scouts, and I was with Arthur Godfrey for a couple of years, and I traveled. I was out on the road doing things. So I've been out full-time in the business. I did a couple of side tracks as a director for a PAL. I still was performing gigs. I also worked as a social group worker for the Bronx Boys Club, where I wrote, I organized the Bronx Boys Club theater group, where I integrated it with girls. That was way back, we're going all the way back into the 50s now. Then I got involved in Democratic politics. I wrote a lot of jingles for the Senator Kennedy running for president, and I sang at his reception at City Hall when he was the senator, and he promised to bring me to the White House when he was president, which he did. And I performed there, and then I got a job as cultural ambassador in the contemporary performing arts. This is a lot of sounds and fury of a title. But I worked in that capacity, and I did a lot of other gigs, and I traveled. I played colleges and prisons and things. That I went to Argentina. I went to play the Moscow embassy, and I did a lot of touring. Later on, after that, I was still out there performing Las Vegas and God knows what. And I also performed quite a few times for LBJ, who I am a great advocate of LBJ. I think he was very, very brilliant and very complicated, but certainly pertaining to civil rights, he's the man. He doesn't really get his due. I was down on his ranch one time doing a thing, and he used to like to hold court, and then after barbecue, he said that the civil rights bill, he was working the civil rights, he said, by the time he got through with the civil rights bill, he says it's going to be like grandma's nightgown. Covers everything.
Oh, that's great.
He was a remarkable, remarkable guy. So I played all over the world. You name it, I've been there. It's hardly a place you can say under what circumstance. And I started doing the Jack Parr show in NBC way back then. And I did all of the TV shows, the Ed Sullivan show and the Today show and the Steve Allen show, Virginia Graham show, and did a lot of those things. And I was with Gary Moore for quite a long time, a couple of years, the Gary Moore Variety Show. And I was a couple of years with Mike Douglas. And Mike was wonderful. I loved Arthur Godfrey.
Did you?
Oh, I loved him. People say bad things.
I know they did.
They do, but he, from my point of view, he was generous, he was very artistic, and he was a gentleman.
I'm real interested. I mean, maybe this is just me, but for me, you're a kind of dichotomy. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, in the performance that I saw that you did at Scott's, it's very...
That was just a throwaway.
I see that now.
Yeah.
You just have a lot of facets. You know? I keep coming back over and over again to the same thing, which is how impossible it is to categorize you.
This is the way I think of myself.
All right.
Unfortunately, people often categorize me, and never in a category that I subjectively accept.
Wow.
Because they find terms that accommodate their own sense of comfort has nothing to do with who I am. Sometimes there is a very subtle kind of color thing, because there are people who are not bigots, but they have the virus of racism has various levels of perniciousness. And everyone is tainted to a certain degree. And some of that tainting has to do with people not being comfortable with who you think you are or who they think you are. They can accept you in roles they would designate for you. But if you dare to think of yourself as separate and independent, they want you to be whatever they want you to be. Getting back to finding one's identity and not accepting the label. Like, for example, in one of my better songs called The Individual Song, there's a line that says, I don't believe every single line that's handed me, and I won't accept every label that has branded me. That's me thinking, free thinking, son of Uncle Sam, and buddy, hot damn, that's what I am. That's to do with, I write a lot about things pertaining to the processes of government and culture and the heritage we have from the Constitution, and about America, wholesome America, America, not the great America with all of its warts and faults, but the America that you could believe in, the idealized America. I write a lot about that. I wrote an anthology of American history and song for the Bicentennial Commission back in 1975, 1976, including a piece which is on that record I gave you called The Saga of the African Slave. Got many awards for that piece of business. And I forgot where I was going with
well, we were talking about labels and, yeah, and you know, and how you define yourself.
Yeah.
And you know, the other thing that occurs to me is that it's not only the prejudice that people would have because of your color, it seems to me, but I think we're a culture that sees people in compartments. You know, that really doesn't understand all the things that human beings can be. So when people are confronted with a complex person, they really don't know what to make of it.
I'll tell you an amusing story, which is really true, but it personifies what we're talking about. Many years ago, I was a frequent performer at Grossinger's. You know Grossinger's?
Very well.
In its heyday, it was a wonderful place. They wrote the book on the hospitality industry. It was a magnificent place. And I used to perform in concert there all the time. But on this one occasion, I was a very successful programmer. After I had sweated through my clothes, and I was backstage, and I stripped down, I got under a Terracross robe, and a lot of people came back to wish me well. And Jerry Weiss was the entertainment director, and he said, "This lady really wants to speak to you." So she said, "Do you mind if I tell you something?" I said, "Oh, tell me whatever you want." She says, "You know, when you first come out, you know how you come out the way you do when you first come out, and suddenly you're there. You're just there, and they say who you are, and then you're there. And you, when you come out in the beginning, like, I say, yeah, yeah." She says, "You know that part when you first came?" I said, "Yeah, yeah, yeah." "When you first came out, yeah." "To tell you the truth, I thought you were colored." I said, "What do you think I am now?" She said, "I don't know."
Oh, God.
Now, that it's amusing. It's amusing, but what does it mean? Here's what happens. So they introduce the entertainer. Her first thing is the imprint.
That's right.
It's black eye. That's the imprint. And all of the stereotypical things accumulated in a lifetime are embedded. But then,
she likes
in the
you.
Process of the show, other things began to evolve. She stops seeing me through a veil of blackness. She starts to experience something else, something else, something else. And then she has fun. She has a good time. Now everything is over. Then when she thinks back,
this
she had this. You see, she achieved in the course of the program acceptance. Acceptance obliterated all of those trivial things that
she transcended herself.
Yes, you see, and so now she said, "Well, this is it." So I said, "Well, what do you think I am now?" "I don't know."
Right, right.
But it couldn't be that.
That, because she knows what that is, and that's not what she experienced. That is a quintessential story. It's extraordinary. You don't mind if I use that?
Of course.
I mean, not only in this interview, I'm going to use that a lot.
Yeah.
Because it does. It speaks to everything.
Right.
It speaks to everything. It speaks to our limits. The limits by which we are bound that we don't even know. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yes. Thank you for that, Steve.
Oh, well, I got a million of them.
Oh, thank
but
you, too.
But these things have meaning.
Yes. See?
They have meaning beyond itself. There's something that shows, and this is that obscure but omnipresent entity of which is a part embedded in the culture. And there's a great denial about the nexus between slavery and contemporary society and what was going on there with the oppression of people and the destruction of a people's identity and sense of personhood, sense of just general acceptance. And it has damaged a lot of our population, and it has impeded the potential. And you have to be very, very careful, as I was always admonished by my mother and father about never to buy the bitterness, never that you have a responsibility to be loving. I was just thinking about a song that I thought I might do one night at the Lambs, which I haven't done in ages and ages and ages, and called Nevermind, which touches on that. I'll give you the basic lyric of the song. It says, and the premise of it is that I, as a person of color, looking out at the world, those who would judge me and not accept me, and it pertaining to color and so on, that I can't be angry at them because there, but for the grace of God, go I, that I, that's all that I can do to be a decent person, to be a loving person, to be kind, to be fair. This is hard work. It's a full-time job just to be that, you see, and I have to achieve that, and never mind about who they are, what they don't do. And the lyric says, it's all that I can do just to be gentle. I've got my hands full trying to be kind. As for all those people who are being so unkind, that's their business. Never mind. It's all that I can do just to be loving, even when I don't feel so inclined. As for all those people who would sooner hate than love, that's their business. Never mind. I won't try to tell you all a lie. There, but for the grace of God, go I. Jesus tried to teach us how to love thy neighbor. It ain't easy. I try. As for those who never will accept me, I still need to love all humankind. Call me Pollyanna or call me deaf, dumb, and blind. That's my business. Never mind. Life and people are not always fair. To me, that is neither here nor there. Fairness has to start somewhere, so let it start with me. That's my business. Never mind. It's all that I can do just to be gentle, to be gentle, to be loving, fair, and kind. As for all those people who are otherwise inclined, that's their business. Never mind. Love is my business. Never mind.
That's lovely. Well, all right. I mean, clearly I could take up the rest of your life because it's a long story and it just is continually interesting.
I've been speaking very rapidly because you don't know what has pertinence that you can use and would do anybody any good from my life and experience.
The show is about helping people figure out who they might have been, who they really are, and then hopefully trying to become it.
Yes.
And I interview people who make their living or their life with an art because in order to do that in this culture, it has to be who you really are.
Even now, I have to really fight just to be who I am. And there's so many distractions. You can forget who you are. And see, and if you really have the zeal and the zest and the desire to please and appease and to accommodate others too, you can find yourself bending, and then you find other people pulling your strings. And to be secure in the deepest recesses of your own persona, to know this is who I am.
Right.
I know. You know, and as a child, I was an outgoing, loving child, and so on. And I had to learn to fight, physically fight.
Yes.
You know, and the particular things with race and so on. And to my goading, my brother says, you have to summon up that thing in you, which we all have, which defends us against the onslaughts of things that might hurt you or harm you. And you really hate to have to resort to that side, to dredge up your uglies to defend yourself.
But you are worth it.
Yes, except that my dad had perhaps more easy access to that part of his higher self in dealing with things, instead of resorting to the uglies. He had his intellect, and he had his dignity,
yes,
and his eloquence.
He could be above it.
And his stature, you see. Mm-hmm. To be so relaxed into that you don't, just in frustration, just lash out and become ugly. Right.
Well, is there anything you want to say about having lived a life dedicated to this work of yours?
To make music with the, not just playing music which is written on a paper, but making music from inside of you and in relating to people, sitting down, breaking bread with people. I suppose that the power of the word, the power of love, the triumph of love over its opposite, and of course retaining who you are when the forces of life and the multitudes would suggest to you that you are something other than what you know you are, and that other is always lesser than you know that you are.
That's great. That's great, and that's probably a very good place to stop. Thank you so much, Steve.
Well, I hope I gave you something.
You know you gave me something.
So, Steve DePass, one of a kind. The Americans singing poet, but so, so much more. And so much a role model demonstrating what it's like to be yourself, an individual, what we all are, individuals. We're not cookie cutters. We weren't meant to be. But so few people have the permission that Steve seems to have had virtually from the beginning of his life to not only be exactly who he is, but to develop every single talent that it was within his body, his mind, and his psyche to develop. Words came to him naturally, easily at the beginning, right? Making up songs as an infant, as a child, speaking, encouraged, stimulated by those loving parents who would not give up and who didn't want to turn him into somebody he was not, who loved him into life. And then discovering a physical capacity, the ability to box, to use his body. And using all of what he is in the service of others, really, of entertaining, of amusing, of instructing. And you can hear even at the end of this interview what he says is, what I wanted to do was give you something others could use. And of course that's what he does with his life, is he gives away things others can use, things that only he can give. And so, as always, I'm hoping that you heard the passion in it, the energy in it, the enthusiasm in it, and that a life can be lived at that level. And I'm hoping that the part of you that might have been submerged is jumping up and down and saying, see me, know me, be me. So that was a long interview, which I didn't want to cut any more than I did, because I want to play a couple of more songs. I want to show you a perhaps more frivolous side of Steve DePass. I'm going to play Sidney Easton, and then I'll tell you what else I'm going to play.
Sidney Easton taught me how to dance. emotional condition, and that will liberate your behind.
Sandy Easton taught me how to dance. Take a chance, make a stance, shake your hips in your pants. Sandy Easton taught me how to dance to the rock and roll.
Shake it
to the right, shake it all night, shake it to the left.
So there you have it, the lighter side of Steve DePass, the one and only. And as I have run us right down to the wire here and want to play one more song before the show runs out, let me thank Josh Hackney, without whom none of this would be possible, and tell you that again, you can reach Josh and me at my website, thelinshow.com. Just click on email me and say you want Josh or you want me or ask me a question or whatever. And as always, I hope you got something you can use from this show, something that intrigues you, something that will bring you back, because I will be here next week, and boy, I hope you will be too. So we're going to go out on this show in another more serious song of Steve's called The Saga of the African Slave. Here, Steve DePass.
Work! Work!
Working for the master, move a little faster. That was the disaster of the African slave.
Work!
Working for the master, move a little faster. Of the African slave.
Kings and tribesmen, warriors bold, black men kidnapped, bought and sold, beaten and humiliated to the last man, packed in a vessel like sardines in a can. Many of them suffocated, most of them died from deprivation or suicide. And just
working for the master, move a little faster. That was the disaster of the African slave.
Chained all together in very tight quarters, crossing gigantic Atlantic waters. Miserable suffering in want of food and care. Rasping, grasping, gasping for air. Men and women leaving all they knew and loved. Human animals are kicked and they shoved. And just
working for the master, move a little faster. That was the disaster of the African slave.
In a ship's pocket where the air was never fresh, all for the profit in human flesh. Hopeless, helpless, yet they would rise and mutiny when they could. From this nightmare so distressful, some such mutinies were successful, but still they came in growing numbers, shattered beneath the ship deck lumbers.
Fruit of a continent, African manhood, sacked by the millions. Each black man stood facing destiny in strange places, nowhere found familiar traces. Just
working for the master, move a little faster. That was the disaster of the African slave.
Indentured servants, there were a few. White men, black men, Indians too.
How the slave men differed from these, as they differed from each other in varying degrees. Different languages and customs and religions are the facts. From different
slaves, working for the master. Move a little faster. That was the disaster of the African slaves, working for the master. Move a little faster. That was the disaster of the African slaves, working for the master. Move a little faster. That was the disaster of the African.
See, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. That I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we're